Conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. He's been at the helm of the Prince George's County school system for almost 7 months, and in that time, Millard House II has already made significant changes to improve education in the county. Well, tonight, we sit down with Superintendent House about what's been done, what's in the works, and his thoughts about what's ahead. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can X me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Superintendent House, thank you so much for joining the conversation and coming in. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Harold. It's great to be here with you, and great to engage in conversation over the next little while.
It's been almost 7 months. As a matter of fact, it'll be 7 months tomorrow. When you look back at what has happened over the last 7 months, what is it that has surprised you the most about the challenges that you've had to face?
You know, there's been nothing that has been unexpected, quite frankly. I think being in education and being in this post-COVID world, there are very few surprises. There are a lot of challenges ahead, but there are a lot of successes as well. And I'm excited about, you know, tackling both, you know, building upon the successes and really strategically ensuring that we head on, take on the different challenges that are out there. And there are several.
Speaking of which, the several, probably the most significant one is the metal detector issue, which happened as a result of the shooting outside of Duval High School. You have done something that superintendents in the DMV have been talking about literally for years. You've put metal detectors in all of the high schools. Was that a hard decision to make? Has it made a difference?
Yes and yes. And what I will say is that last fall, the former CEO, Monica Golson, really put together a safety action forum that really brought together parents, community members, educators, students, and law enforcement partners to really take a look at our student services and security systems and processes throughout the school district. And what they came up with that we instituted this school year was a proactive opportunity to put security enhancements in all of our high schools, which we have done. And if someone out there is thinking, well, what is security enhancements? It's really screening technology that is really installed at the entry portion of a high school. And it allows for us to know if something's being brought into the building or attempted to be brought in the building. These are really just extra layers of security, but we know the additional technology and the visibility can only be as effective as the collective efforts. So the bottom line, it's about people. It's about ensuring that we talk to security. Our security enhancements are just that. It's an enhancement to build upon what we already have going on in our building. So all of our high schools have it installed. We're now moving to our middle schools, and we're utilizing data that lets us know where we might need to place the security enhancements in middle schools. So not all middle schools will have these. We also have moved forward with clear backpacks as well. And the clear backpacks are another layer of opportunities. And in many cases this school year alone, harm was averted to have students that are speaking out or security enhancement equipment that is working to pull a weapon off of a student. These are instances that we can say, yes, it has worked. So we're happy about what we have seen, and we'll continue with the middle school rollout as we move forward.
Why was it a hard decision to make? And when I say hard, I mean from the perspective of, you know, emotionally and looking at, obviously, there needed to be a sea change, a shift.
Yep. So what I will say, I've had this conversation in four different school districts in Oklahoma and Charlotte, North Carolina, where I was the chief operating officer at one point, Tulsa, Oklahoma, also Clarksville, Tennessee, and here in the Prince George's County Public Schools. And generally what I hear from community members is that we don't want our school looking as it's an institution or institutionalized. That's one of the most common themes. But the counter to that is that we want the safest schools possible. And so in response, what we've done is really purchased the best technology possible that does not give you that institutionalized feel and really provides the safety measures that you're looking for. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. If you really didn't know what the equipment was, because it can be pulled out, put in, whether you're doing it for a football game or the front doors of a school, it can be utilized interchangeably. So we feel good about, you know, really countering what people have had issues with over the course of time.
One of the other struggles that the school system has had since the beginning of the year is the bus situation, the shortage of bus drivers, missed routes, late routes, and the like. Where is the school system with that now?
So it has been, Harold, an ongoing issue for quite some time. I think what a lot of people may not realize is that the Prince George's County has the eighth largest ridership in the country. We transport every morning about 85,000 students. In the afternoons, we transport about 85,000 students. So we're moving a lot of kids. But there's also been a lot of opportunity to get better. So what I decided to do coming out of the gates is have a very extensive audit that would tell us where the efficiencies or inefficiencies are in terms of our transportation services right now. We actually just received the findings of that audit, I believe, today. So we'll be utilizing these findings to make some recommendations moving forward that we believe will really close the door on a lot of inefficiencies that are out there.
What did you learn from the audit?
So I actually haven't even seen it as of yet.
Just between the two of us?
So, but what we do, what I can tell you is when I talk about inefficiencies, I'm just going to use an example. And this is not in the audit, but what I expect to hear and what I expect to see is that Prince George's County has 16 or 17 different start times, or AKA bell times. And if we have 16 or 17 different bell times, I expect the audit to make some recommendations on what we can do differently. For an example, you know, an efficiency may be going down to 5 or 6 bell times. That way you won't have so many late buses getting to, you know, your middle schools or your elementaries. But there'll be several other recommendations in the audit. That's just an example of what I expect.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Prince George's County Public School System Superintendent Millard House II. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open. Let's talk to Candace, calling from Upper Marlboro. Candace, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I would like to first welcome the new superintendent to Prince George's County. What I'm really concerned about is the special education students. To my understanding, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Some of the teachers, they need more training, working with the kids that have IEPs. The test scores are very low. Some of the teachers are not on the same page, willing to work with the students, and the grades are being affected for the IEP students. So I would like to know, you, considering that you had, you know, you had some stumbling blocks when you were coming up.
Mm-hmm.
What do you plan on doing to make sure that those teachers have the education that they need, the backup to support the IEP students in the high school level? Because right now I'm experiencing where I'm not getting any type of support at all. And I call, you know, your administration and there's nothing.
So what I would say, I heard you mention stumbling blocks as a former student that was diagnosed with dyslexia, a speech impediment growing up. It took great educators like yourself to be able to support me to really get to this point of where I am, to be able to support the number of students and educators. So what I would say, Candace, is that it's extremely important that the IEP team be involved in every step of the way in terms of decision making around what a student's needs are. That team is the driving force in what it looks like. And then, as you mentioned, ensuring that you have a well-trained educator in place. One of the things that we did to start this school year out to ensure that we provided more consistent training is that not only are we doing training during the school day, but also trainings for professional development for teachers in the evenings as well. That was limited before the school year. So I think it's important if there are particular areas that you are looking to get support with as an educator. It's either working with your building level principal to find out where and when the offerings for professional development exist and are, so that we can provide you with the necessary support to build that capacity, so that students that may need additional support, the IEP team that may need additional advisement, that it's in place. So I would definitely advise you, and I can have my my team to connect with you after you get off the call this mm-hmm. evening.
Yeah, we can we can have the producer connect her with with your folks.
We'd be glad to do so.
Candace, thank you so much for your phone call. The producer will get your information and move forward with that. I did want to ask you, and I was going to ask you later, but since Candace brought it up, I should bring this up now. Prince George's, Montgomery, Alexandria City Public Schools, D.C. Public Schools, all of them have been in one way, shape, or form on this program for years. And one of the biggest struggles outside of school security is special education. And all of the parents, the guardians who call in, they all say they're just isn't enough. There aren't enough resources. There aren't enough teachers. There aren't enough facilities. What are your thoughts moving forward about providing more resources, not to the teachers, mm-hmm. but just more teachers, a building, something like that?
And Harold, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms, especially when we talk about the number of professionals. Post-COVID, it's been a very difficult time in America, period, with the number of educators that have either left the profession or considering leaving the profession. So we are developing multiple pathways, not only for special ed teachers, but also for regular ed teachers, are hard to fill areas so that we can bring teachers into the profession. The traditional means of training teachers at universities is not yielding the kind of numbers of special education teachers or even regular education teachers nowadays. So we're having to take a completely different look at how we get people to come into the profession. Example, the development of Grow Your Own programs, where school systems, develop their own certification programs to build their own teachers. It may be taking a teacher assistant or a paraprofessional and encouraging them to come into the profession by paying for a portion of their tuition or all of their tuition. So we are doing just that. The other big thing that as we look at teachers coming into the profession is what we're seeing around English language learners. The Prince George's County has 40% of its student population, and we're about 128,000 students currently. But of those 128,000 students, 40% of our students are Latinx. And a number of those students are non-English speaking students. So it's important to have as many educators that that speak second language, namely Spanish as well. So it's going to be important for us to continue to build upon those programs, to have as many educators coming into the profession. Again, we're just not seeing the numbers that we saw before. And it was something that, you know, we would go to a recruitment fair and bring people in on a consistent basis. That day has come and gone. And we have to go out and not only continue with that approach, but also build our own along the way.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to the Prince George's County School Superintendent Millard House II, Cherie calling from Maryland, Karen calling from Fort Washington. We will be taking your calls next. Do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking education with Prince George's County School Superintendent Millard House II. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can certainly X me at H Fisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Karen, thanks for hanging on. Calling from Fort Washington, what's on your mind?
Hi, Mr. House, first of all, welcome to Prince George's County.
Thank you.
I have a question. I know that we are doing everything we can to bring new blood into the county and all of the wonderful incentives that we have for new teachers coming on board. Mm-hmm. As a veteran teacher, I want to know, what are we going to do to show our veterans that appreciation? Because we've gone through COVID, we stayed late, we come early, we feed kids. We are moms, dads, therapists, you name it. We carry all the hats. But it seems like the veterans, we're being pushed aside. There's no incentive. There are no extras for us. What can we do?
First of all, was it Karen you said?
Yes, yeah. Karen.
Mm-hmm. Karen, first of all, thank you for your support and your service to our young scholars. It takes, you know, individuals like you to really move them forward to be college and career ready. So thank you very much. But what I will say in terms of keeping professionals and, you know, ensuring that we have the stay power that we want to see, I do know the school district has done its best to ensure that we stay on par with the blueprint expectations. And I believe by 2026, you know, school districts that are in the midst of the blueprint conversation have to, you know, ensure that the finances are in place to meet, you know, the minimum pay scale. There also have been, over the course of the last few years, pay raises that I think are commensurate of ensuring that we appreciate educators like yourself. We would like to continue with that same pace and being able to provide additional incentives. But what we also know is that we are a byproduct of our county, our state, and also what we've seen in terms of COVID relief federal ESSER dollars. So all of these things, we are continuing to try to do our best to hang on to individuals like yourself to make certain that you feel appreciated around the work that you do on a daily basis.
Karen, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate your phone call. I did want to ask you about, and this is another safety and security thing, what do you believe is perhaps the root cause of some of the violence that we are seeing in the school system across the county? What has happened and what is happening with our children?
You know, it's interesting. Just this past week, I, along with Chief Aziz, our police chief for the Prince George's County, we met at a safety summit on safety and carjacking. And unfortunately, a lot of the incidents and issues that we typically see in schools are byproducts of what we see in the community. When you see a rise in community violence, when you see a rise and issues in the community, you typically see that rise. It trickles over into schools as well. For example, when COVID allowed students to come back to school, there was a lot of mental health issues that our students were dealing with. Our teachers and principals were a byproduct of those issues as well. And so right now you're seeing schools provide quite a bit of support and provide services that schools typically didn't provide. We've provided probably one of the largest investments that you'll see around mental health and counseling services, which is at the heart of the overall school culture that we know in our schools, and ultimately safety. When it's all said, if you don't have a mentally safe and healthy child, it can put people in jeopardy. And that's a part of what we're seeing right now. And Prince George's County has moved forward with a telehealth program where students can receive mental health support free of charge through a program that we've put together that we're very proud of.
I wanted to ask you about specifically the Charles Flowers and the reinstatement of Principal Gorman Brown. What can you tell us in the aftermath of his absence about that?
That's actually a personnel issue, and definitely can't get into any personnel issues specifically. But what I do know is that the principal, staff, the community are all banding together to ensure that the right supports. My school's office, my executive school's office, have all been involved to ensure that not only at Charles Flowers, but all the other schools as well that have had instances of support that has been shown, that has been needed. And we're on deck to support them on a continual basis.
This is why I ask. Because, as you know, there was a huge fight during his absence. And there have been parents who say that had he been there, it would not have happened. I've spoken to some veteran teachers during his absence, and all of them say, paraphrasing, leave that man alone, because they believe that he is an excellent administrator and an excellent principal. I've not met him. I don't know him. With that said, now that he has been reinstated, when you have someone who is popular like him, have you considered perhaps sitting him down with other principals and talking about whatever his secret sauce is for making sure that that school is successful, be it personality, not personnel, but personality driven or not?
Yeah. So this is not necessarily about Wise High School, Flowers High School, but on a consistent basis, we sit our administrators down across the board to share best practices, professional development, to make certain that whatever professional sharing that we need to do across the board is a part of what we do at all schools, middle school, elementary, and high schools. So this is not necessarily about one woman or one man or one administrator. This is about, you know, getting better as a school system, getting better as a in our profession as well. And that's something that we try to promote in what we do on a monthly basis.
You had a 90-day review. Do you believe, after getting that kind of 90-day report and having been here now almost 7 months, that you need to remake the Prince George's County school system?
So I think it's about revisiting elements of the strategic plan. And there are some things that we know that we can work on, but there are also some things to celebrate. And I'll start around a couple of things that I think it's important to celebrate that our educators have been directly responsible for. We got MCAP results back most recently that really show that that there were some huge bright spots in terms of the work that we're seeing in the Prince George's County. These results show that PGCPS students are outperforming, quite frankly, the state when we factor in race, ethnicity, and other things like English as a second language, special education. We had a great year last year. And those who are below the poverty line, we've shown great success in comparison to other school districts. In math specifically, there was a major step in the right direction in almost every grade level. We are close to returning to the pre-pandemic results that we want to see. Also proof that special education and English language learning interventions are working, because there's been a lot of investments in those particular areas. With most ELL students, English language learner students in the state, PGCPS schools represent more than half of the state's top 50 most improved in English proficiency. Now, as you mentioned, there are areas that we know we're going to have to focus on as well. Safety and security was one of them. Student well-being in terms of ensuring that our students have the mental health support, and then our facilities. We know that it's important to ensure that our students are proud to walk into their facilities. What I can tell you, Harold, is that 50% of the facilities in the Prince George's County are more than 50 years old. So we have a new vehicle that allows us to build schools at a much faster rate, which is the P3. In this school year alone, we opened 6 brand new middle schools, serving thousands of students throughout the district.
If I may interrupt you, that a lot of that we reported on before you got here.
Okay.
What is it that Millard House II wants to change? Because you're the boss. The buck stops with you. You were brought here to make change, just like the chief of police. We've been robbing Texas in Prince George's County. And so, but what is it if you had your druthers? And do you believe that you are given the political flexibility and have the support, the political will to make those sweeping changes?
So we do believe. I think my board is a very supportive board that understands the work. We're in the midst of budget season right now, making some very difficult decisions in terms of what things will look like. One of the things that I think is going to be very important that we do differently in terms of building our workforce out is the national shortage around teachers. I've run Grow Your Own and built Grow Your Own programs. We want to expand upon that, partnering with not just one university, but multiple universities in bringing in. We've had conversations with the president at Bowie State, the University of Maryland. We want to build out those programs to ensure that we're luring more and more educators to our doorstep.
Don't forget Howard.
Absolutely. We look forward to having that conversation. Yeah. We also know that around math performance, it's an area that while we saw improvements in certain grade levels, that it's an area that we have to improve. So I'm proud of what we're doing to build capacity in our professional development systems to make certain that we are training and providing the best world-class training that we can for our teachers to ensure that we see better math performance. Also, you know, the idea of just making certain, and I'll go back to this, that the supports behind mental health, if you don't have a child that is okay between the ears and their head is not in it, then you're not going to have a child that can learn and be provided with the education that we want to provide them. So I'm really excited about the teletherapy and the supports that we've instituted this year. Those are things that I think are making a difference, not only from the standpoint of teaching and learning, but they're making a difference from the standpoint of security as well. Because these are students that may be hurting, that are now able to receive support at their speed when they need to receive it. So those are some big areas that I think that we're making some major inroads in and around that I'm proud of.
Let me talk to Cherie calling from Maryland. Cherie, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Good evening. So what's on my mind, hello, superintendent, is what about the, it's some bullying. It's about bullying. What is your intake about the bullying that's going on in the schools?
I think...
And it's going on in my child's in middle school, and it's going on very frequently in that school.
First of all, Sheree, thank you. Thank you for reaching. Thank you for reaching out. But I think in every instance that has to do with a child that's not being treated with the respect and honor that they need and deserve, it's important to not only get the classroom teacher involved, but also the administrator involved. Documenting, you know, the instances that have occurred is extremely important. So that the administration at the school can hear exactly what you're hearing as a mother when you get home and have those conversations with your students. I never want to use the unqualified statement that children will be children. Children should be taught to be kind and learn how to treat people. So it's important that we manage what that looks like, not only as adults at home. I have a middle school son of my own, and it's something that I impart every day when he goes to school and gets home from school. So I would say make sure to document, get your school administration involved, and make sure to follow up if those instances are continuing to occur. Mm-hmm.
Sheree, thank you so much for your phone call. Are you concerned about the budgetary restrictions that have crept up? Obviously, these things have been coming before you got here. And the governor has spoken about taking money, you know, the transportation budget, for example. Everybody has to tighten your belt. How do you improve on the school system when there's going to be less money available?
So we're in the midst of what are our budget conversations. We were actually at the county offices today having some of our initial conversations around budget. So nothing has been established around increases or cuts as of yet. But if cuts do occur, it's important for us to roll up our sleeves. And you have to determine what your priorities are, determine what you can do without so that you can ensure that your priorities are funded in the manner that they are necessary. If you receive additional funds, it's finding out where are the areas utilizing data that you can build upon to ensure that the kids are receiving, whether it's more tutoring, whether it's more credit recovery. So we're in the midst of those conversations right now. My board has had two board workshops. We have another one this week as well. We'll be meeting with the county again. And of course, we're in the midst of legislative session also, where a number of our delegates are paying close attention to different bills that are being thrown out. So we're a part of all of those conversations. And I'm very hopeful that we can be in the spirit of a season that doesn't see the kind of cuts that some expect.
Have you had any thoughts about getting more parental participation? That has been a long-standing issue in this county. And having the benefit of having worked for school systems all over the country, the more different parents are, the more they kind of stay the same. They all want good schools. They want their children to do well. But there are always different kinds of challenges for parents and maybe reasons why they aren't participating.
So parent engagement is extremely, extremely important. One of the things that I've tried to do in my first 90 days is engage. I quite frankly, immediately set out, into the community engaging with educators, teachers, parents, students, families, visited more than 60 schools, had a number of town halls. And in many cases, I heard about, you know, some things that we were doing great. In many cases, I heard about things that that we weren't doing great. But that was an opportunity for us to stop, take a look at what we were doing, see if there were opportunities to infuse into our strategic plan to build upon what we know is going to be important. One of those things is parent engagement and family engagement. And we have a very robust parent engagement department. Led by our communications team led by and Dr. Sheila Jackson. So I encourage people to get involved, find out all of the different activities throughout the county, the different trainings that we have for parents. We have a version of what's called Parent University that's free of charge that allows parents to learn about all the different possibilities that are available so that they can engage. We also work very closely with an organization called PCAC, and PCAC is an organization that's run by Mrs. Milhouse, and I'm sure she'll get a kick out of me mentioning her name, because she's always looking for additional parents to engage. And we meet with them on a monthly basis. And during those conversations, we talk about the different things that that are important to parents and how we can continue to engage with them meaningfully.
Why do you believe that some parents are reluctant to participate outside of time? But in your experience, and I'm not just talking about, mm-hmm. you know, the time that you've spent here, but is there any common thread for those parents who don't?
Yeah, I think the common thread you mentioned, a lot of parents are engaged, and time is a very difficult piece to come by. But, you know, as a parent myself, I know that if I'm not engaged in my children's education, they probably won't have the optimal opportunity to be provided with what I want and expect for them in the educational institution that I have lifted up for them. So regardless of the scenario of the why, it's figuring out the how. How do I engage? Is that through the Parent Teacher Association? Is that through working directly with my child? So it's wiping the why out and developing the how with your school. I think that's extremely, extremely important. If you want to do it at a higher level, getting connected with PCAC, getting connected with our parent engagement offices, and making sure that you engage so that you can continue to learn more of what it is to be able to support your child in this walk and journey of getting their education.
Francine, calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling, Francine. What's on your mind?
Okay, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And good evening. My concern is, to the question is the marijuana smoking in the schools. It is really terrible that the children are allowed to smoke in the building. And I'm a night cleaner, and I get there like 3 o'clock, and the school reeks of marijuana. So why is it that it's allowed that they can smoke this in the school? It's to me, it's the school's house, the school rules, and they shouldn't be allowed to do that. If they do it at home, that's fine. But it's not fine. But in the school, it's a whole different a game. You can't do that here. And then, again, I am in recovery of 30-some years. Hmm. So maybe some type of program should be offered to the parents or that child to get them the help that they need.
Francine, congratulations on your
absolutely
on your recovery, Mr. Superintendent, please.
Absolutely, Francine, and thank you for calling with your concern, and thank you for the support that you provide our schools on a daily basis in the capacity that you do. First of all, what I will say is that the allowance of any type of substance abuse or substance use in our school is definitely not something that administration teachers will allow for. Now, the question is, does it happen? It happens. It definitely happens. And one of the things that we set out for early on, and namely at a couple of high schools, was to put together a drug a task force slash committee to really take a look at, you know, why we're having the issues that we're having at a couple of schools. And so we are putting in place at those particular schools some supports, not only to strengthen the code of student conduct. And that's one of the things that we will be doing as a review. I have a group of principals as well as another department that will be taking a close look at the code of student conduct. My hope is to strengthen that because right now, and I've lived in a handful of states, and I've seen some states that have a strong state statute around drugs in schools. It's a little bit different in Maryland. And I'd like to strengthen what we're doing in the Prince George's County to ensure that the accountability is something that people will pay attention to at a whole nother level. So definitely not something that is allowed, but something that does happen from time to time. But we look forward to strengthening what we do to ensure that the accountability speaks to students paying close attention to not bringing substances inside of the walls of our schools.
Francine, thank you so much for your phone call and your concern. You just mentioned about, in some of the other school districts, some very strong policies against drug use, vis-a-vis, you know, marijuana or what have you. What did they do?
To give you an example, in my first superintendency in 2017, I was superintendent of a school district just north of Nashville, about 40,000 students. And it was state statute that if drugs were brought into a school and a student was caught with drugs in a school, regardless of the amount, they were actually out of school for 365 days. Mm-hmm. That was not up to a school district. That was state statute. Mm-hmm. So what you see in different states is just that. It's very different. But it's a little bit more lenient in the state of Maryland in terms of and there's that balance between accountability and support. But I think we have an opportunity to take a close look at both the accountability and the support to come up with some different recommendations. We'll be making that review coming in the spring to take a close look of our code of student conduct. And I'm open to the possibilities of strengthening both the support and the accountability.
The review of the school bus situation, you said you've not had a chance to look at it just coming in today. Is that going to be made public?
Eventually, once we, of course, we need to,
no, I love that,
to do
eventually
a review. but out of respect for my board, my board needs to have the opportunity to see that report first, and then we'll open it up to the public, have it posted on our website, executive summary or something. So we look forward to doing that.
One final difficult question. This is in reference to the crossing guard situation. This is hard because we lost, young people in Riverdale, and the reality is that this does not fall always on school districts. Drivers need to do better, especially when they are in school zones. Whether there's a crossing guard or not, behind buses, drivers need to do better. It's state law when you take your driver's exam. Yeah. But with that said, do you have a plan for trying to address that issue with crossing guards? And is that as difficult a situation as it is with teachers and bus drivers and the like?
So my heart continues to go out for the Riverdale Elementary community. I want to thank the Riverdale Police Department again, the Prince George's County Police Department, for moving swiftly through that investigation to address it. Crossing guards, to answer your question, Harold, there has been a shortage, not only in our county, but several counties throughout the United States. one of the things that our county executive, Angela Alsobrug, moved forward to do was to really charge not only myself, our police department and other agencies to come together to really take a close look at what we can do differently to ensure that we get as many crossing guards as possible on our streets to be able to support our families as we try to ensure that we have the most walkable community as possible in the Prince George's County.
Has there been any progress since
there
the
There has been progress, and what we did come up with as a part of this group that came together. And I do want to delineate that crossing guards are an element of the county. While they support schools, they are hired through the county, and the county is currently hiring as we speak. Mm-hmm. And we've increased the pay, I think, from $12 or $13 to maybe $17 or $18 now. Decreased the age in terms of who can become a crossing guard. It was 21 years of age. Now it is 18. So the pay has increased. The age has decreased, which opens up a bigger pool of individuals. So we're seeing more applicants through the county that are coming in with the hopes of ensuring that we hire more individuals to become crossing guards.
Prince George's County Superintendent Miller House II, again, welcome to Prince George's County. Thank you so much for talking to us, and
Absolutely.
Good luck to you.
My pleasure.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, January 30th, 2024. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.